Act 5. 157. Exterior. The lighthouse. Night. Waves still crash against the headland rocks, hard enough to splatter the lighthouse with foam, but the tide is on the ebb now, and things are better than they were. Temporarily only, however, because... 158. Interior. Lighthouse control room. Night. The lights still blink and flash, but some of them are now beaded with ice from the spray, and little drifts of snow are piling up in the corners of the room. The wind whistles, and the anemometer is still topping 60 miles per hour. Sound. A high-pitched computer beep. The camera moves in on a computer screen that has gone red. White letters appear on the screen. National Weather Service storm surge warning for all outer islands, including Cranberry, Jared Bluff, Kankamongas, Big Tall, and Little Tall. High tide at 7:09 a.m. They produce significant flooding and lowland damage. Outer island residents are strongly advised to move to inland areas of high ground. As if to punctuate this, an especially powerful wave splashes in through the broken windows and splatters this computer screen with foam. 159. Interior. Lower Atlantic Street. Night. Godso Fish and Lobster is totally gone, except for the ragged stump of the building. So is the town dock. The waves slap the rocks where the dock was. Splintered pieces of lobster traps float back and forth, and a single waterlogged bale of pot bobs and surges. 160. Interior. The town office. Night. Ursula's comforting Sandra. Mike is heading for the meeting hall section of the building when Joanna steams past him. He grabs her arm. Mike. Slow down, Mrs. Stanhope. Easy does it. The door between the meeting hall and the office area opens. Molly and Melinda Hatcher come through. Molly's distress turns to gladness when she sees Mike, and she almost hurls herself into his arms. He hugs her hard. Joanna, meanwhile, doesn't give a shit about Easy Does It. She dodges past Melinda and heads down the aisle that leads to the toilets. Ursula and Sandra walk to where Mike and Molly are drawing apart a little. 161. Interior. Town Meeting Hall. Night. Andy and Jill are sitting on a bench about halfway down. Andy has got an arm around his wife, offering what comfort he can when Joanna hurries past toward the ladies' room. Andy.
Joanna, I wouldn't.
She pays no attention, simply hurries on down the aisle. 162. Interior. Ladies' room. Features the door. It opens. Joanna stands there, eyes widening, mouth dropping open. After a moment, Mike joins her. He takes one look and then moves her away. As the bathroom door starts to close on its pneumatic hinge, Mike.
Mal, help me.
163. Interior, the town hall. Mike gently passes the stunned Joanna to his wife, who walks her up the aisle as far as Andy and Jill. There, Joanna stumbles and utters a little cry of bewilderment and grief. Jill.
Let me.
Jill sits her down and puts an arm around her. Joanna begins to weep. Molly starts back toward the ladies' room. Mike comes out, his arms wet almost to the elbows. Molly looks at him questioningly. Mike shakes his head and puts his arm around her shoulders as he leads her past the trio on the bench. Mike.
Andy, can I borrow you a minute?
Andy looks questioningly at Jill, who nods. She's busy comforting Joanna. 164. Interior. Resume town office area. Mike, Molly, and Andy come in. Ursula and Sandra stand nearby, looking the expected question at Mike. Mike,
she's dead, all right.
Sandra, can you get me a couple of blankets to wrap her in? Sandra, making a big effort.
Yes, I can do that. Two shakes of a lamb's tail.
Mike is struggling hard to stay calm and do as many of the right things as he can. There is a sense of him making up the procedure as he goes along, but why not? What kind of procedure is there for a situation like this? Sonny Brodigan and Upton Bell come up the stairs, curious about what's going on now. Mike spies them. Mike.
Billy Soames. You're sure he's dead?
Sonny.
Yeah. Now what?
Mike. Old Mrs. Stanhope is dead, too. In the ladies' room. Upton Bell.
Holy God. She have a heart attack? Stroke?
Molly.
Suicide.
Mike. Is Billy still out there in the supply shed?
Sonny.
Yeah. Seemed like the best place. We covered him up.
What the hell?
Sandra comes up the stairs with an armload of blankets. Someone else needs covering up now.
Mike.
Andy, you and Sonny cover Mrs. Stanhope. Take her out and put her with Billy. Use the back door of the meeting hall. I don't want folks to see a corpse going through, if I can help it.
Sonny.
What about Jonas? Her son. I seen him downstairs getting ready to turn in.
Mike. Let's hope he does. His wife can tell him in the morning.
Upton Bell?
Upton.
Yes, sir?
Mike. Go downstairs and pick out 5 or 6 men from those that are still up. Guys who can walk through 0.5 mile of deep snow without having a heart attack if it comes to that. Don't tell them anything except that I want to see them, okay?
Upton.
Okay.
Hugely excited, Upton heads back downstairs. 165. Interior, the island market, night. Hatch, Jack Carver and Kirk Freeman are sitting at a card table they've set up in the canned goods aisle and are playing gin rummy. Hatch looks up at 166. Interior, the security mirror from Hatch's point of view. The mirror is now positioned in such a way that Hatch can see into the constable's office. Henry is behind Mike's desk, leaning back in the chair, chin down on his chest, arms crossed, dozing. Robbie sits off to one side watching Manoj, who is back in his same old position, heels up, knees apart, head down. 167. Interior. Resume card players. Satisfied, Hatch draws a card, smiles, and spreads them out face up. Hatch.
Gin.
Kirk.
Ah, booger snot.
168.
Interior, the convex anti-theft mirror. Close up. Robbie looks up into the mirror, trying to ascertain if he is being watched. He decides he isn't. Now, he reaches over to the corner of the desk, picks up the pistol that's still lying there, and gets up. 169. Interior, the constable's office. Henry is dozing. The men in the market are playing cards. Robbie approaches the cell with the gun. Linoge sits where he is, watching him come. When Linoge speaks, he does so in the voice of an old woman, Robbie's mother. Linoge.
Where's Robbie? I want to see my Robbie before I go. He said he'd be here. Where are you, Robbie? I don't want to die without someone to hold my hand.
Henry stirs a bit in his doze and sinks deeper. Robbie reacts with surprise, horror, shame, and then his face hardens. Robbie.
I think this town's had enough of you.
He raises the gun and points it through the bars. 170. Exterior, the town hall, night. A side door opens and a number of men come out, ready to augment the crew already at the store. As promised, their wide bodies, Upton, Sonny, Johnny Harriman, Alex Haber, and Stan Hopewell, Davy's father. Stan is a lobsterman we saw briefly in Part 1, battening down for the storm on the now non-existent town dock. They head for the island services vehicle, fighting their way through the snow. Two more figures linger in the doorway, Mike and Molly. Molly's wearing a shawl and hugging it to her against the cold. Molly.
Is it that man? The one who grabbed Ralphie in the market? It is, isn't it?
He doesn't answer. Molly continues.
You'll be all right, won't you?
Mike.
Yeah?
Molly.
That man, if he is a man, is never going to see the inside of a courtroom, Michael. I know it. You do, too.
Beat.
Maybe you should get rid of him. Make him have an accident.
Mike. Go on inside, before you freeze your tail off. She kisses him again, a little more lingeringly. Molly.
Come back to us.
Mike. I will. She closes the door,
Mike starts down to the truck, walking in the tracks the others have made and bending forward against the relentless wind. 171. Interior, a sunlit bedroom. Day. This is a beautiful room, full of light. The window is open, and the curtains bell out lazily toward the bed in a summer breeze. Henry Bright comes out of the bathroom, wearing only pajama bottoms with a towel slung around his neck. As he crosses to the window, Frank Bright, his son, pokes his head around the side of the door. Frank.
Mom says, come downstairs and get breakfast, Daddy.
Above Frank's head, Carla's now appears. Carla.
No. Mom says, come downstairs and get breakfast, sleepyhead daddy.
Frank puts his hands over his mouth and giggles. Henry smiles. Henry.
I'll be there in a minute.
He goes to the window. 172. Exterior, little tall island, from Henry's point of view, day. It's beautiful, as only a Maine island can be at the height of summer. Blue sky over long green meadows that slope down to blue white-capped water. We can see a few fishing boats out there. Gulls cry and swoop overhead. 173. Interior. Resume bedroom with Henry. Day. He takes a deep breath, holds it, then lets it out. Henry.
Thank God for reality. I had a dream that it was winter. There was a storm, and this man came to town.
Lenoge. Voice. This scary man. Surprised, Henry turns. 174. Interior. Lenoge, from Henry's point of view. Although it's summer in Henry's dream, Lenoge is dressed as he was when we first saw him on Atlantic Street in front of Martha Clarendon's house. Peacoat, watch cap, bright yellow gloves. He grimaces into the camera, revealing a mouthful of fangs. His eyes go black. He thrusts the silver head of his cane at Henry, and the head comes alive, snapping and snarling. 175. Interior, the summer bedroom with Henry. He steps backward to avoid the silver wolf. His knees hit the bottom of the window, and he tumbles out, screaming. 176. Exterior, Henry falling. Only it's not his house he's falling out of, and not the ground of little tall island he's falling toward. Hard as that ground might be. He is falling toward a boiling red-black pit of fire. It is a pit of hell. It is also the boiling red and black we've seen in Lenoge's eyes from time to time. Henry falls, shrieking, away from the camera. 177. Interior, the constable's office, features Henry. He twitches in the desk chair, falls out of it, and gives a strangled yell as he hits the floor. He opens his eyes and looks around, dazed. 178. Interior. The market, featuring the card players. They look up at the sound of Henry's yell and see that Robbie is standing by the cell, and... Kirk.
Hatch. Robbie's got a gun. I think he's going to shoot that guy.
Hatch bolts to his feet, knocking over the card table.
Hatch. Robbie, get away from him. Put that down.
179. Interior, the constable's office with Henry. Henry.
Robbie, what?
Henry gets to his feet. He's soupy, still half lost in his dream. 180. Interior, the cell with Robbie and Robbie's false mother.
She is sitting on the bunk where Lenoge sat.
Naturally, she is Lenoge. She is very old, about 80, and very thin. She is dressed in a white hospital johnny. Her hair is wild. Her face is reproachful. Robbie looks at her, hypnotized.
False mother.
Robbie, why didn't you come? After all I did for you, all I gave up for you.
Hatch, voice.
Robbie, don't.
False mother.
Why did you leave me to die with strangers? Why did you leave me to die alone?
She holds out her thin, trembling hands to him. 181. Interior. The market. Hatch, Jack, and Kirk dash for the open door of the constable's office. 182. Interior. The constable's office. Henry, still hardly aware of what's happening, walks toward the cell.
Manoj is sitting on the bunk, holding out his hands to Robbie, and here, from Henry's perspective, it really is Manoj. Manoj looks at the door leading into the market. It slams shut in Hatch's face.
183. Interior, the market side of the door, with Hatch, Jack, Kirk.
Hatch actually strikes the door and bounces off. He tries the handle, but it won't turn. He slams his shoulder against the door, then turns to the other two. Hatch, don't just stand there. Help me. 184. Interior, resume constable's office. We hear thuds as the men outside try to break down the door. The false mother sits on the cot in her Johnny, looking at her wayward son. False mother.
I waited for you, Robbie, and I'm still waiting for you. Down in hell, I'm waiting for you.
Robbie.
You stop, or I'll shoot you.
False mother.
With that...
She looks at the gun contemptuously. Robbie follows her gaze. 185. Interior. Robbie's hand, from Robbie's point of view, close up. The gun is gone. He's holding a writhing snake. Robbie screams and opens his hand. 186. Interior. The constable's office. We see the rest of this from Henry Bright's point of view, which means we see things pretty much as they are. It's the gun Robbie drops, not a snake, and it's Linoge in the cell, now off the bunk and walking toward the bars. Linoge.
I'll be waiting for you in hell, Robbie, and when you get there, I'll have a spoon. I'm going to use it on your eyes. I'm going to eat your eyes, Robbie, over and over again, because hell is repetition. Born in sin. Come on in.
Henry bends for the gun. Linoge looks at it, and it slides all the way across the floor. Linoge looks back at Robbie, looks hard, and Robbie suddenly goes flying backward. He strikes the wall, rebounds, and goes to his knees. Henry, horrified whisper.
What are you?
Linoge.
Your destiny.
He turns and lifts the mattress of the cot. Beneath it is the cane. He takes it and raises it. As he does, a brilliant blue light begins to shine from it. Henry backs away, raising an arm to shield his eyes. Robbie, who has managed to get up, also shields his eyes. That glow becomes bright, brighter, brightest. The constable's office now screams with light. 187. Interior, the market side of the door. Light streams through the keyhole, around the hinges, and through the gap at the foot of the door. The three men step back, afraid. Jack.
What is it? What's happening?
Hatch.
I don't know.
188. Interior. The constable's office.
Henry and Robbie stand on one side of the room, cringing against that brilliant flood of light. In it, we see for the first time Linoge for what he is.
An ancient wizard whose upraised cane is his chief instrument of magic, an evil version of Aaron's staff. It is shedding that brilliant light in waves. On the bulletin board, papers come loose and float in the air. Mike's blotter rises from his desk and also floats. The desk drawers open, slowly, one after the other, and the objects inside rise up and begin to circle the desk. Pens and paperclips, handcuffs, and a forgotten half of ham sandwich. The in-out basket waltzes with Hatch's power book in midair.
On the far side of the room, the pistol Robbie meant to use on Linoge, what a foolish idea that seems now, rises, turns its muzzle to the wall, and discharges six times.
189. Interior. The market side of the door. Hatch, Kirk, and Jack react to the shots. Hatch looks around, sees a display of hardware, and grabs a hatchet from it. He turns and begins hacking away at the area around the doorknob. Jack grabs at him. Jack.
Hatch, maybe you shouldn't.
Hatch shoves him backward and goes on hacking. Maybe he shouldn't, but he's going to do his duty if he can. 190. Interior. The constable's office. The home-welded bars start falling away from the cell door one by one, almost like falling leaves. Robbie and Henry watch, numb with terror.
The bars fall faster and faster, creating a man-shaped hole. When it's complete, Manoj steps easily through. He looks at the two cowering men, then turns and raises his cane toward the door leading to the market. 191. Interior. The market side of the door. Hatch is raising the hatchet for another blow when the door suddenly opens on its own. Bright bluish-silver light streams out. Manoj. Voice.
Hatch.
Hatch steps into that flood of light. Jack grabs at him. Jack.
Hatch! No!
Hatch ignores him. He goes into the light, the hatchet slipping from his fingers as he does. 192. Exterior. The market. Night. The Island Service's four-wheel drive turns into the front parking area. The storm shutters are down over the market's display windows, but we can see the brilliant blue light shining through the door. 193. Interior. The Island Service's vehicle. It's crammed with beefy guys. Mike is at the wheel. Johnny. Awed.
What in the hell is that?
Mike doesn't bother answering, but he's out of the truck almost before it has stopped moving. The others follow, but Mike is first up the steps. 194. Interior. The constable's office. Hatch sleepwalks into that brilliant light, heedless of the objects floating and swirling in the air. The power book bumps his head. Hatch bats it aside, and it floats away like something underwater. He reaches Linoge, who is almost blindingly bright. Linoge is in reality an old man, we see, with ragged white hair falling almost to his shoulders. His cheeks and brow are carved with lines, and his lips are sunken, but it's a strong face all the same, and dominated by the eyes, which swirl with black and red. His ordinary clothes are gone. He is wearing a dark robe that gleams with shifting silver patterns. He continues to hold his staff up with one hand. There is still a silver wolf's head at one end, but now we see the shaft is carved with magical runes and symbols, and grips Hatch's shoulder with the other. Only it's not really a hand at all, but a talon full of claws. Manoj brings his face down until his brow is almost touching Hatch's. His lips part, revealing his pointed teeth. During all of this, Hatch stares at him with wide, blank eyes. Manoj,
give me what I want, and I'll go away. Tell them, give me what I want, and I'll go away.
He turns, the hem of his robe flaring, and strides toward the door that leads to the loading dock. 195. Interior. The market looking toward the main doors. Night. They burst open, and Mike runs in, followed by his posse. He moves up the center aisle, jumping the overturned card table, and grabs Kirk Freeman. Mike.
What happened? Where's Hatch?
Kirk points numbly into the constable's office. He is beyond words. Mike plunges through the doorway, then stops. 196. Interior, the constable's office, from Mike's point of view. Looks like a cyclone struck it. Papers and office supplies are strewn everywhere, fluttering in the draft from the open loading dock door. Hatch's power book lies shattered on the floor. The jail cell is empty. A litter of bars lies in front of the door, which is still locked, but gaping wide all the same. The hole is vaguely man-shaped. Robbie and Henry stand against the wall, their arms around each other, like small children who are lost in the dark. Hatch stands in the center of the floor with his back to Mike and his head lowered. Mike approaches cautiously. The other men clog the door to the market, watching with big eyes and solemn faces. Mike.
Hatch.
What happened? Hatch doesn't respond until Mike actually touches his shoulder. Mike.
What happened?
Hatch turns. His face has been changed in some fundamental way by his close encounter with Linoge, stamped by a terror that may never leave him, even if he survives the storm of the century. Mike reacts.
Hatch! My God! What?
Hatch.
We have to give him what he wants. If we do that, he'll go away. He'll leave us alone. If we don't.
Hatch
looks toward the open loading dock door where snow is swirling in. Robbie joins them, walking slowly like an old man. Robbie.
Where did he go?
Hatch.
Out there. Into the storm.
Now they all look toward the door. 197. Exterior. Downtown, looking toward the ocean. Night. The snow is pelting. The drifts are still building, and the sea is still pounding the shore and sending up airbursts of foam. Winoge is out there someplace, just another part of the storm. Fade to black. This ends Act 5.